Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Poncio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Hi guys, welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. This is episode 130. It's just Natalie here today. I'm just doing a little intro to tell you what's going on. This is basically a clip show for you guys of our audio files from Comic-Con, which, as we spoke about last week, or 2 weeks ago when we did our roundup, we did all of our roundtables with the cast, and we also started recording a bit of a live audio diary, which sort of ended up falling off the table as an option after we got a bit addled by the cancellation news. But I just thought it would be fun to include the start of that, and you can see kind of what we were like on the spot at the first day of Comic-Con, and also include for you the full roundtable interviews that we both had. So Karen and I were at different tables in the Teen Wolf roundtable room, which means that we were each sitting with a different group of reporters, and the cast member would come to us and we'd speak with them back and forth. I was originally going to just cut our question and answers, so it's only quote-unquote our content or our interview, but the flow didn't work very well of doing that. It sounded a bit weird because it was quite conversational. When you participate in a roundtable, you do have the right to use any of the material that comes from that roundtable as long as you participated. So we are allowed to play these clips. Other sites put up videos or transcribe their entire roundtable, including other people's questions. So this is all fine, but we are not 100% sure of the names of every other reporter that was there. So if you were on one of our roundtables and you would like your name credited in the notes for this podcast, please just contact us and let us know. Our Twitter is natwpodcast. You can email us on natwpodcast@gmail.com. You can contact us on Tumblr, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, or just comment on the Hyperbole page. Just so you know, as you're listening, these are the raw files, exactly the files that we have to work with after doing press. So you'll hear that they're very loud, a lot of background noise. The levels of volume between the speakers is not always perfect. What usually happens at a thing like this is everyone puts on their recorder, whether it's their phone or a professional recorder, and puts it down in front of the actor. And so some of the questions from the actual askers don't come out as loudly as the actor's answer. But this is, for authenticity's sake, this is what happens at a roundtable, basically. So I have cut it for each person, so you'll get Karen's table's worth of questions for the person, and then my table's worth. So it's got Kylan first, then Dylan Sprayberry, then Holland, then Cody Christian, then Jeff, and then Tyler Posey to finish up with. So you'll firstly hear about 10 minutes worth of Karen and I's planned audio diary, and then you can skip ahead 10 minutes after that if you don't want to listen to that. Skip ahead straight away to the interviews, basically. So this was our roundtables in full, and in a room like this, there's usually 4 or 5 tables worth, so this isn't even every comment that happened in the room. You can hear in the background that there are, you know, 4 or 5 tables going at once, so there's a lot of varied content, sometimes a lot of repeated answers if someone on one table doesn't know that someone on the other side of the room's just asked the same question, but this is what happens. So we thought for the last ever San Diego Comic-Con for Teen Wolf that you might like to listen to it. So enjoy. Okay, it's recording.
Well, we have to walk.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Natalie.
Where are we?
We are walking through the doors to the show floor.
Yeah. Okay, right.
Left.
Now we're inside Comic-Con.
Yes, but we have to go left.
Oh, God.
And watch all the people.
Okay. So, what have we done today?
We saw Santa. And Santa yelled at the protester, and he said, "This is how you get on Santa's naughty list."
When she says protester, she means the people that are like, "We're going to hell for coming to Comic-Con," like the Jesus people.
Yeah, it was quite funny. I laughed very loudly. Then we had some pizza. My pizza was really good. Was your pizza really good?
Yeah, it was good. So we're just going to talk to you about what we're doing at Comic-Con. Like, whenever we get together, we're just going to turn the recorder on and give you a bit of an audio diary of Comic-Con.
It's probably going to be very loud in the background.
Yeah. If you want to know behind the scenes, we went over to the hotel, to one of the fancy hotels where MTV is basing themselves. We picked up our panel passes to see Teen Wolf tomorrow.
They're promising us a very good panel, so yeah. We'll be bringing all of that info to you guys.
And, by the time you hear this, you'll probably know what happened, yeah. But that's where we're at right now. So Wednesday afternoon, we've got our press passes, we've got our panel passes, we picked up our lanyards, and we're here. And now we're on the show floor. We're going to look at some of the booths. MTV has a booth. Apparently they have a virtual reality, which I don't understand, but we'll give it a go. Alright, so here we are at Comic-Con. Wow, this has only been 2 minutes. I thought that was like at least five. Okay. Yeah. And we'll talk to you about all of the exciting things that happened to us. We tried to enter the Star Trek Premier Lottery today. We got really sunburned and we didn't win.
Yeah.
But in the lobby of the fancy hotel, we did see a bunch of the Star Trek cast on their way to get ready for the premiere, including Chris Pine in sweatpants. And then Karen had a really excited cry at Zoe Saldana. Why do you love Zoe Saldana?
Because she is badass. Like Gamora and Uhura. And I saw her in Colombiana, I think it is.
Yeah.
So you're like shoving this in my face.
Yeah, I want to make sure it like...
And she's just really awesome because she's a great actress, but she's also an action hero, and there are not enough of those of the female variety, so...
Yeah. We did not... We also talked
saw
to them.
John Cho.
We saw John Cho. We saw Karl Urban. We didn't go up to them. We literally just saw them walk past us as we were sitting in some couches. And I was like, is that John Cho? And then Chris Pine came and ran and hugged him. And I was like, it's definitely John Cho. And there's the rest of the cast.
Yeah. I've had a long time crush on John Cho.
Yeah. Okay, we're gonna go and buy some stuff now. Or something. And talk to you later. Okay, so we're back. It's like an hour or so later. We've been wandering the convention floor, the exhibit hall, and we've been to a couple of the booths that we wanted to check out. Like, we got our TV guides from WB.
I got a Holtzman marker card from Karen Hallian. Karen Hallian. It's already been a night.
And I had a look at the American Gods installation, which I'm covering for Hyperbole, which is very, very cool. And
I didn't
spooky.
Understand any of it, but...
You will.
Yeah.
And then we went to MTV booth Teen Wolf to do their virtual reality experience, which is actually designed to introduce the new villains for season 6, which is cooler than I expected, and I thought it would just be a thing. I didn't think it would be like spoilery, but it is. So now we have something to think about. So Okay, talk about the Tunnels experience. There were two options you could do.
Right.
So you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, the Tunnels experience. So you put on this headset with like a virtual reality goggles and everything, and you're in the tunnels, and all of a sudden Lydia comes up to you, and she's like, "What are you doing down here?" And you're not supposed to look at them. And Scott comes running up, and he was like, he basically says the same thing. They're very panicked, and Natalie was a good girl and didn't look at what they weren't supposed to look at, but I did, because apparently I'm the rebel of this duo, which is astounding to me. And I look over to my right, and there is one of the Ghost Riders, and he's kind of coming up to you. And I looked back over at Lydia and Scott, and they start to disappear. and they're panicking and everything, and I look back over at him, and at the end, the thing, this must not have happened to you then, at the end, he like comes right up to your face, and
I just kept looking at Scott and Lydia, because they said don't look. I also didn't realize you could turn like all the way.
Yeah, it was
like,
a 360.
You could look more than just right ahead of you.
Yeah.
It was the second time today that's happened, because I didn't realize the video that, like, we saw a 360 video today of, was it Teen Wolf as well?
Yeah.
The tunnel, the
morgue.
The morgue video, and I was like, I didn't realize that you, like, turned the phone and did 360 on that either, because my brain can't, like, wrap itself around that.
Yeah. Well, I looked, because I knew to look, and the Ghost Rider comes right up to you, and it's really creepy looking, kind of black and long hair. I think it had it without its hat. Honestly, it was so fast. It reminded me of, like, Dementor-like almost, but not quite that decrepit. So don't quote me on that, because it was very fast. But, but you get more information from the library scene. So you talk about that one.
Well, in the library scene, that was the other one, and it was Malia and the two small ones, Liam and Mason.
Yes.
And they were basically, you know, addressing you as the viewer, being like, come on, you have to tell us, like, what did you see? Like, you know, I'm meant to have had an experience. And they're, you know, if you tell us, you know, they can, you know, we can help you. You can trust us. And then, like, I think it was Liam first, like, he, like, flickers in and out of existence, like a glitch. Like, it looks like a technical, not even a technical glitch, like a very obvious, like, but kind of, like, very, like, Matrix-y, like a virtual reality, like a, he doesn't go poof in like a supernatural way. It's more of a sci-fi, like hologram.
Yeah,
glitch.
Almost like how the Dread Doctors looked. They flickered in and out.
Yeah, and he basically, and then all stuff starts flickering out, like chairs and all stuff, you know, things around you, and they started talking about whether it was, you know, they had to get more information. They had to find out exactly what they could do, you know, what else they were going to erase. And then they kind of, Malia kind of wonders, oh, okay. Mason disappears completely, and then Malia says, you know, oh, do you think they can erase people? So it's clear, like, that she's forgotten that Mason ever existed. Like, they're pondering whether Mason's gone, and they're pondering whether they can erase people. So it seems like what they can do is, like, alter the mind, whether it is the internal mind of one person or literally the fabric of reality, and erase someone from existence, who knows where they go at that moment, and erase the memory of them, erase their existence, and that's what they're going to do. And we obviously suspect, like, given the amount of screen time that Dylan probably doesn't have, we're kind of suspecting that the season's going to focus around Styles, because he's going to be erased.
Yeah.
That's our theory right now.
Yeah. Another thing, did you hear the line that Malia said? I think she said something about she's weak, and I know we were supposed to find out how taking her mother's power at the end of season 5 was going to affect her.
Yeah.
I wonder if that, like, I wouldn't think it would make her weaker, but I swear that's what she said.
I'm not sure, honestly, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But everybody forgetting Styles, that
yeah,
sounds
I feel
horrible.
Like that. I feel like that's what's going to happen. And,
yeah.
You know, rather than, like, lying there in a coma, which is what we kind of suspected, like, that he's going to get.
He's just gone.
Flickered out, and they're going to have to realize that he ever existed and then
right.
find him.
And Scott re-remembering.
And we might get a lot of flashbacks of childhood or something like that in that
yeah.
case.
But they said Styles is a part of, like, so much of the season. They said that we're going to fall more in love with him every episode. They said it's going to be big on Scott and Styles, and it's definitely about friendship. So the fact that maybe Scott is going to have to try to remember all of these things
he's going to have this, like, you know, putting together his memories. He's going to be like Bucky going to the museum and crying over videos of Steve. Like, you know, like, oh, yeah. That was my life. Like, imagine.
So, yeah, it was pretty much the virtual reality.
Now we have some idea of, like, where to go with asking some questions. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, hopefully they'll reveal more at the panel as well.
Yeah.
So, all right. That was fun.
You ready to go on to Marvel?
Yeah, okay. All right, bye.
Bye.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
Your first Comic-Con.
First Comic-Con for Teen Wolf, yeah. That's incredible. It's going to be my first panel, too. Oh, my gosh.
It'll be fun. You'll have fun.
Yeah, I will.
So, obviously, I think the big question right now is, you know, coming out of season 5, how is your character dealing with having been a beast, and is that going to be addressed, or...
Well, I can answer both questions. So, Mason has definitely been obsessed with the supernatural world, and it became a reality to him once he found out his best friend was a werewolf. And then becoming the beast, it was a borderline traumatic experience, and the fascination with it is still there, but he sees the dangers in it, and he sees that this is real, and this is a very scary life. As much as it is cool, there is dangers to it. And that kind of is like an underlying tone of how he's going to attack the next problem in season 6, because it's not just fun and games. This is like people's lives are on the line. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily get addressed because there's so much. We actually are thrown right into another extremely crazy, how are we going to get out of it type situations. So,
growing up with that, I guess, you know, being human and surrounded by all these supernatural creatures, that it's always like in real life.
Yeah.
Is that something he's constantly worried about?
I don't think so as much anymore, because he's proven himself, and Scott has trusted him with certain things, with, you know, being a part of the plan, and, you know, he was Plan B for an episode, and he actually succeeded, and so that he's kind of riding that momentum, and he's continuously kind of like Styles 2.0, basically using his intellect to help the pack in certain ways, and he's using his obsession with the supernaturals to propel the pack. So if he finds out, you know, about these ghostwriters, he's going to learn everything he has to know about them, and, you know, assist in that way.
So I was talking to Jeff a little bit about his, like, willingness to include LGBT characters, mm-hmm. and, you know, you're playing an LGBT character, which is already pretty monumental, but
right.
also it's one of color. It's,
yeah.
like, you know, another thing.
Yeah.
Like, what's that experience been like for you?
It's been great, man. It's just so awesome how much support I get all across the board. And I'm just definitely honored to play this, because this is a very different character, and it's been such a joy to see him grow, and people really love him. I love that, because this is such a successful show, and it's kind of like, you know how Double Dutch is, like, someone's already jumping in, and I have to, and I actually made it, and people aren't like, who is that guy? They're actually excited to see Mason, so it's just been an honor. It's a surreal moment, and I'm just very proud to play this guy, and it's just great.
Do you get, like, a lot of fans coming up to you and talking to you about it and telling you, like, what it means to them, or, like, how they respond?
It's mostly on social media, you know, but that's enough for me, because I know people, that's their way to kind of connect to people they look up to, and just seeing some of the tweets, you know, how I've made a positive impact on people just by doing what I love. It's a great experience, and I'm honored to do it, man.
Thank you.
What kind of things are Mason and Leah going to get up to this season?
Survive. that's pretty much what we're doing. That's our main goal, and just to keep everyone intact. And they're like brothers now. I mean, after you go through something that's so intense, if you will, after you go through something like that, you can only get closer. And we're just using our relationship, because we're a part of a pack now, we're not just best friends. We're part of a pack, so this is a new chapter in their lives, and they're just gonna try to make it through it. You know. I really like where he's heading, and to be a solidified member of the pack, and I think he already is in that sense, but just to continue that process, because I feel like he's found a purpose now. And, you know, he has a 4.6 GPA, so school isn't really his his thing that he likes to do, but it's not his passion. His passion is really using that intellect to doing something that's just so really astronomically cool. So just being more involved in the pack and being a beta to Liam, if Liam ever becomes that alpha. So, you know, it'd just be cool to just be a part of that, I think. Me? Mason? I don't know. I think he has some cool traits. Like, he's brave. He does things that I personally wouldn't do. Like, he attacked a berserker. He did so many things. Like, he was trapped by the Dread Doctors and said, go, leave me. I would not say that. That's the last thing I would say in that moment. But, he might have some alpha qualities. Who knows? Yeah.
Liam are very good friends. How would you say that they're alike to Scott and Styles? Like,
yeah,
compare them.
I actually like that. Because Styles,
not jokey, like,
not really.
Yeah,
not really.
More serious.
I feel like Mason does have a little bit of that sarcastic type thing, and it's fun because it actually gets shown more in season 6, even in the midst of all the craziness that's going on. So I think that's kind of how Mason relates to Styles. But as far as the leader thing, Liam becomes is learning how to become a leader by Scott. So it's kind of like I'm supportive of him becoming this leader. And I know he's the leader, and I'm supporting him, and it's just, we kind of have our little jokey moments, which is cool, because I really like that about Styles and Scott, so, you know, we'll see if there's any more.
What can you tease about how Mason specifically is
going to
interact with the Ghost Riders?
Yeah, well, he definitely gets up close and personal with them. A little too close for his liking, I'd say, but you know, because he's a part of it now. He's not an outsider looking in. He's in it, so I think that's going to be really cool that he's a part of it. So it's pretty much answered that, I guess. All good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm just gonna roam around then.
All right.
Figure out where to go. Thank you, guys. Mason is like everyone has been saying, Jeff told me, is pretty much Styles 2.0.
Yeah.
In a way. So Styles uses his intellect and you know, his detective skills, if you will, to figure things out. And that's kind of Mason's role. Since he doesn't have not one supernatural ability, he uses his mind. And I think he does a lot of research on these villains because he's obsessed with the supernatural world to begin with. But then when he uses that obsession to actually further him and the whole pack. So, yeah, he gets to see how crazy the world is, you know, with these Ghost Riders and wondering who's actually been forgotten. Because when someone's taken,
you don't know
that they've been taken.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty crazy, wild experience for me.
Yeah.
See, Dread Doctors kill people. That's kind of their thing. They try to create people, and the failures, they just murder them. But with these guys, I feel like there is a little more darker, sinister motive behind them, because they're just not out to kill people. They're out to take them. They're still alive, but not the same. And, you know, there's a lot of...
Where are they?
Exactly. That's the big question. So I think they are a little bit more trippier, a lot more weirder. So, yeah.
Well, and there's also that added layer of tension, because it's not just that someone's going to kill you, but, like, even if you're researching them, if they could make you almost forget.
Exactly.
If they grab you, all that research, everybody's going to fit you and your research.
Exactly.
So like, that's a, you know, level of suspense there.
It's crazy, and it's like, because like if you see them, if you're marked, if you've seen them, then no one else can see them. So you're kind of like going through this terror by yourself, and it's really like they make you feel really helpless, the victim. So that's why I think that's the part that is really dark and really scary, and I love it. That's one of the main things why I really love being on this show.
Now, you know, a lot of some of the first cast is kind of aging up, and they're getting ready to graduate, and they're kind of, we don't know really what's going to happen with them, if they're going to stay in Beacon Hills or
right.
move out. And then you guys are kind of the second generation, and you know, kind of becoming the new holding down of the fort. And how
what does it feel like to kind of be that new force and that new grounding?
It's amazing, man, because I mean, I didn't expect for things to go this well for me and my character, because I already knew it's such a successful show and it has such a strong fan base, and it was just great to just be a part of it. And so I'm really glad that I feel really privileged to just be a part of it and be accepted and, you know, be one of the guys, or one of the packs. So this is awesome. Definitely.
I unfortunately have to steal it.
Okay.
Thank you. Very nice to see you.
Nice to meet you guys too.
Dealt with anger issues in the past and sort of moved through it in season 5, but I don't think it's, you know, necessarily completely gone. Is there any exploration of that this season?
You know, I think every person can have like relapses of those kind of things, and my character does. I think his go-to emotion whenever like something stressful or something bad is happening is like anger. He gets angry at himself because like he needs to figure out. He doesn't. It's almost like he gets like self-conscious about himself, and then he gets angry at himself because he's like not sure if he can do what he needs to do. So that's kind of like always his like go-to thought process of when that SHIT goes down. But I think each season he shows progress, and he's more and more optimistic about being able to control it and really not letting it affect his overall being.
Dealing with a lot last season with his girlfriend like in trouble and his best friend in trouble. So what can you tease about like where we're going to pick up with him and what his priorities are in season 6?
We're going to pick up with Liam. You can tell he's grown up a little bit. He seems like more of an adult. You know, all these events that have happened the past couple years or seasons or whatever for the character have really, you know, made him who he is now. And we pick up and see that Liam and Mason are still best friends. You know, everything's fine with them, and they're still partners in crime. And that his relationship with his girlfriend, Hayden, is much more adult-like. You know, like, through all this stuff that they've been through, you know, her dying and coming back to life, almost dying again, all this crazy stuff has really brought them closer together and help, and I don't want to say help them grow, but, you know, force them to grow up. So that's what we're going to see.
So you've been a baby beta for a little while now. I mean, not baby, but like a beta. Are we going to see maybe you accelerating towards becoming an alpha this season? What can you kind of tease about that?
I think that's like, that's never, going to be like a main storyline, I don't think, at least for now. But it's always kind of like the underlying, I think, goal for Liam and also for Scott. You know, Scott wants to push him in the right direction that one day he can be a leader. And they both know that. It's kind of like an unspoken thing with them. And like, that's what they're always striving for.
So one of the most striking things about the show as it started out was that all the main characters were older. They were in their 20s, you know, and they're playing these teenagers. But, you know, coming into the show, you were on the younger side. You're more high school age.
Right.
How has, you know, your journey on the show kind of mirrored your own journey, like being in this age and being in this time and struggling with your own things?
That's a good question. It's weird because when I'm playing the character, my character's, you know, he's a teenager and he's learning about himself, I'm doing the same thing. I'm learning who I am. Like, I don't even fully know who I am yet. And it's very weird to be playing someone else who doesn't know who they are either. There's just so much confusion. Like, no one knows anything. But, I wouldn't say easy to play that, but it's a little bit more relatable for me because I understand how he feels. You know, you don't always, you know, you wake up one day and you feel like you're a completely different person. You know, because, you know, when you're a teenager, you're like a sponge, you know, different things influence you all the time, and you just want to try out new things and be different people, and you're just like trying to figure your shit out.
I mean, I'm sure it helps you get in the mindset a little bit.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Have you like learned anything from your character about yourself?
Don't kill your friends. I learned that. You shouldn't kill your friends, because then their moms get mad at you. Yeah. No. I mean, I've just learned how to be a better person and how to take it. I mean, that's like, it seems like that's my character's biggest thing, is like, you know, being able to keep his morals in check and figuring out, you know, what's right and what's wrong, and it's such a big scale compared to regular life, but that's kind of what I take from it. It's just trying to be a good person and make sure I'm doing the right thing.
Cool, thanks.
Thank you.
You gotta steal me?
Yeah, I gotta steal you.
Every time I see the blue dress in the back. Hello.
Hiya.
Is it bad if I do this? Is that bad?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
You can leave. Hey. You can do whatever you want.
How you doing?
I'm good.
What was it like to work with Jeff stepping back this season? What was that atmosphere like on set?
It was interesting. It felt a little bit different. I mean, at this point, we pretty much had the same people every season in terms of crew and like everyone we're working with. So everyone kind of knows the flow. Everyone kind of knows what's supposed to go down and how things work. So it didn't seem too different. But usually when Jeff was there before, he was always there, always behind the camera, you know, writing notes and, you know, like, oh, I don't like that. I didn't like that idea. Let's change this. And so that was a little bit different, not having him there, because he's usually pretty prominent in that field.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's still Teen Wolf, you know, nonetheless. So I don't think it was a bad thing. I think it was just different.
So we kind of saw a little bit of the aspect of, you know, your character stepping up in a role in the pack. Do you think we'll see any more now that we talked about Scott going away to his own stuff? Will we see Liam step up?
That's definitely the end goal of my character, is that, you know, when Scott leaves, I'm going to be the one to take over. And that's, you know, throughout every season, that's been kind of like the end goal, is Scott wants Liam to step up and be a man and make the right choices and know how to lead. And it just seems like every season that gets more and more prominent for my character, is, you know, showing that he can lead and he can make the right choices. As my character grows and, you know, figures out who he is as a person, that aspect of his life kind of, he's able to control it. He's definitely, each season he's able to control it more and more. But I mean, there's going to be those times, just like in any person's life, where you have breaking moments, or you kind of go back to an old part of your life or whatever, and he kind of, you know, that's his like go-to emotion, is just anger. So there's going to be certain, you know, parts to when he kind of loses it a little bit and goes back to that. But for the most part, I'd say that he's learning, you know, how to control it pretty well.
And the season ended with kind of your character and Hayden happily together. Is that kind of flowing smoothly, or is there any like lingering resentment from, you know, before they got together, her death?
My mother's joining us.
You know, the choice of making her.
I think there was, Liam doesn't have any resentment. I think he was just more so scared at the end of the last season, whenever she was bit, you know, because he's like already lost her once. He almost lost her again. He's like, I don't know what this is going to do to you, but it's up to you. He's like, at that point, he just didn't really know. He didn't, but it worked out, so that's good. And I mean, for this season, their relationship is, you know, from the scenes that we've done and just the way it feels, it's very much more adult, and seems like through all this shit that they had to do to be together, that it kind of, you know, forced them to grow up. Yeah, and it made them adults.
if there was one thing that you would say or one moment that makes this upcoming season worth watching, what would you say to get fans back interested?
Just the overall tone of the season is just really creepy. It's, you know, every season's a little bit different, and this season is just super, super eerie and just kind of like... What I can say is that these villains that we had this season are so much... They're so different from anything else we've ever done. And, you know, we had real horses, which was really cool. And, I don't know. I don't want to ruin anything because it's so cool and it's so different.
You saw the virtual reality of what they
you guys saw
like.
That?
Yeah. I saw it and what they drew in the disappearing, you know, erasing people from memory.
Yeah.
Does that affect Liam at all? Like, is that where it's kind of like everyone gets wrapped up in it, or is it different age, you know, age one of people, sort of different villains?
Everyone, to some degree, will get wrapped up in that.
Yeah.
To you know, some people more so, some people less. But everyone will, you know, have to deal with the Ghost Riders and the memory loss aspect of that. Looked at Jeff to make sure he wasn't giving me any like angry looks. Like, what are you saying? No, but this season's going to be great. It has a new tone, new villains. I think everyone. It seems like every character is much more serious this season and much more focused on. You know, like fighting these guys. Because in the past couple of seasons, there's always been like one or two characters that are kind of like lingering, like not sure. Like my first season was like my character was like, I don't know if I want to be a part of this. And, you know, and I think it was last season Scott was kind of having some trepidation.
Yeah, like it took a while for the first era of characters to really solidify themselves together, and I guess like a new group.
Yeah. They used, we had to do it all the way through. There was no break. And then, it was like all green screen, so they edited everything else around us. And it was pretty simple, but they just gave us a script of like 3 pages, like, learn this right now, and we have to do it. So, but it was fun. I really like it. I can't wait to see it. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So she's never been to a press table or Comic Con, so she's experiencing it for the first time.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome.
I love your shirt.
Thank you. This is amaze.com/equality. It's supporting equality for the North Carolina bathroom bill, and that people should be able to use the restroom that they identify with.
Love it.
It's for sale if you need to know.
Yeah.
So jumping right into it.
Yeah.
Your character obviously has been growing throughout the entire show, especially coming into her powers and everything. Season 5 saw her doing a whole lot more with them. What's going to happen in season 6? Is she very comfortable, or is she constantly learning new things she can do?
I would say Lydia is the most mature she's ever been this season, so I think she's dealing with civilian adulthood matters in that sense. I know breaking out of Eichen House, you're about to see a more physical side of Lydia. And this season, she puts back on her heels and is in more of the psychological and intellectual conversations of trying to solve Beacon Hills' problems. Yeah.
What has been your favorite personal mystery that you cracked on Lydia? Like, she's such a...
There's one coming up. And it deals with time travel, or a different period, I should say. I gave that a little bit away, but you'll find out in the first 3 seconds of the episode that it's time travel. It was a great episode that dealt with more of the Irish folklore as a whole, not just Lydia's family, and it potentially connects to helping beat the villain. There's actually two, but beating one of them this season, yeah.
Lydia gained so many new abilities last season, but always under like really intense circumstances. So what can you tell us about how her powers are going to play in now that she's more like back into pack life?
Her powers play in indirectly into reaching out to other time periods and seeing how those banshees connect to her banshee-ism, and learning from others is how she is able to contribute this season. I think it's the biggest aid Lydia is able to lend. So it's indirectly is how she's able to help.
We've been hearing about this big Stydia moment, which I know you probably can't spill too much about, but how does it sort of compare to their past interactions or, you know?
There's something definitely added to the pile in comparison to the past interactions. I would say there's definitely a new angle in which they interact.
Do you find yourself rooting for them, or do you kind of want Lydia to go her own way?
You know, it's funny. As an actor, I really try and live in the moment and not... I know it sounds like a cop-out answer, but it's true, because you can't... Anything you get married to, any project you're auditioning for, any project you want, any episode that might get written... If you start getting attached to it, it won't work out. So I honestly just, each script that comes to me, I'm like, okay, what am I doing? Got it. And I just focus solely on that as an isolated case. It was funny, somebody had asked us in another interview, well, what do you plan for Lydia, you know, coming up for the rest of six? And I said, I don't know. I haven't thought about it. And Posey's like, oh, I've got a ton of plans. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. And so, you know, it's whatever they throw at me. I am a fan of the fans, and I was a Ross and Rachel kind of girl, so I get it. I'm not just in like left field being like, I don't, what are they talking about? I totally get it. So I want them to be happy, for sure. And if that's Stydia, then that's Stydia. So I am hoping that they get their wish, and I think they will be successful. Yeah. Lydia, I wouldn't say has a front row seat to them, but she's definitely analyzing them the most. And there's a reason why she's able to analyze them the most.
And what did you think of them compared to like past
villains? I think that 6A is very similar to 3A in that a lot of it's psychological. My favorite was the white room and the bathtubs and the go. And so this is reminiscent of that season, in that a lot of it is psychological and dealing with space and time, and you're not really, it's not on the surface. That's why I like it.
Obviously, the older generation is looking ahead to college and maybe moving on from Beacon Hill and stuff like that. What can you tease about Lydia's path following high school?
Well, the first half of six is definitely, graduation's mentioned a couple times, but we're not quite there yet. I think the second half of six will be dealing with a lot more of those issues. I think she makes the most mature decisions that benefit, you know, Beacon Hills as a whole versus just herself. But as far as adulthood goes, she's the most mature, but she's not quite there yet. I think that'll be dealt with, which we haven't started shooting yet. So that tells you that much. Yeah. Any others?
Lydia's been through so much. What's your favorite moment that you played?
That one episode coming up this season I like a lot, because it just answers a lot of questions from a real life, quote unquote, standpoint. That would it applies to all of Irish folklore about banshees. And you could write a whole show about just banshees, which there was one, and I like that there's an episode that focuses solely on that. So a lot of questions get answered with people come up to very detailed questions about banshee history. I'm like, and that episode deals with a lot of that, which is, and they put their own Teen Wolf spin on it, which is fun. Yeah.
Thank you guys.
Appreciate it.
Have fun today.
Thank you.
Bye, Mama.
Hi.
It's their first Comic-Con.
Oh, awesome. Ever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, how has that been for you?
It's been fun.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
Crazy.
Yeah.
She follows us from room to room, and I was like,
she just me, but you have to be here. You know, experience it.
So she's never really really join me on any sort of work excursion ever, except she's been a set a couple times, but that's it. So in 9 years of acting, I was like, you should come see.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely an experience. My dad's gone with me once and then was like,
I'm done.
Too much.
Yeah, I'm sure she's like, hey, it's enough this year.
That's a kind of good starting place because I've heard you talk before about like the kind of difference between like being just like a working actor and like there are other people who are on shows with this viewership and they don't have sort of the intense scrutiny. They don't like, you know, the kind of the niche,
they're like passionate culture interest.
Did you ever expect like to be involved in that kind of thing? Like was that something you were aware of when you started acting that, you know, there were these sort of like that you could be in the position of this kind of cult favorite situation?
I would say Teen Wolf's such an interesting position in that usually shows that have such an intense, passionate cult following from the fans' perspective, is also huge in Hollywood. And we've had this bit of a rock and a hard place where we were on a newer scripted network. And so we were one of the first shows to become successful on MTV as a scripted network. And so we still felt from our side of the professional standpoint, as far as auditions go and exposure, we still felt like the little engines that could in Hollywood. So to get such love from our fans, it's really been such a grassroots organization on their behalf. And we can actually say that we are here actually because of them, not because we were pushed in these sneaky ways, these like furtive ways to get to the...
The fame and the hype is sort of more of a direct like fan to show rather than, you know, promo or
I mean, yeah,
or,
we
know,
didn't have as a fraction of the marketing that the other shows have had. And, the fraction of the exposure as a newly scripted network when people are looking for scripted content. So we were one of the only ones to, you know, at least in the beginning. And so, it is literally the fans, and we are so grateful for them. It's been a really unique, special experience for me to have. I mean, I think it's just rare, and it's not, the chances of that happening again are, you know, the chances of going on to another show that's this successful, I mean, that's a tough one. Of course, I hope, but you never know.
Has it changed your consciousness of how you guys sort of have to relate to doing, you know, media and the world and stuff like that, as opposed to people who kind of don't really go one-on-one with their fans that much? You know, like
it's making, I would say the relationship to the media, it's made it easier because the fans are so welcoming and you feel like you already know them because of social media and because they are a notch above of the other, you know, the other fans to all the shows, in my opinion. So I would say it just makes it more comfortable. It makes it all feel like one big block party.
Sorry, talk about the season.
Considering that we're losing these strong female characters left and right, how do you think your relationship with Malia is going to develop? You guys are kind of the two strong females left in the pack now.
Yeah, Malia and I have a lot of great scenes this season. I think she keeps up her physicality and how she interprets the world. And Lydia has her grandmaster macro plans with, you know, obviously her intelligence going against Malia's interesting perspective, fresh perspective on the world of how the world works. So seeing the dichotomy is quite funny. At least it was when we were acting it. And I think that it's needed. It's her fighting skills and Lydia's intelligence is needed in this particular conundrum that Beacon Hills is facing.
Especially without, obviously you can't give around too many spoilers, but with the VR experience kind of gave us some insight with the ghostwriters and how these villains are almost more cerebral because they're taking away memories and they're taking away a lot more of agency from you. And that's almost more terrifying than someone who can do something physically to you. They're taking away things of your memory. And a lot of what Lydia does is not something that can be done physically. Like, how is that going to affect her?
Yeah, I would say the problem in season 6A is similar to the problem in 3A. It is definitely more of a psychological problem than a physical problem. There's two villains, dual villains in this season, and one of them is certainly more psychological. And I think there seems to be a lot more lot more conversations about Alzheimer's and what is that like to lose your memory? What is that process? And it's one of the most painful, diseases out there. And so, in a weird way, we deal with similar issues. And that, what is it like to lose your memory? And VR touched on it, and it's going to be a huge theme in season 6.
Yeah. And yeah, she seems to be able to know, in the VR at least, that she's aware that her power can find it in some way. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a pretty big thing as well.
Yeah, I mean, Lydia has as usual, has a central role to solving some of these crimes, but perhaps because the people it's affecting during the season are pretty central as well. It carries a bit more weight. Yeah.
It's going,
right? We're still alive somehow, some way, so we're doing something right.
How's your Comic-Con?
Oh, I cannot complain. I'm just happy to be here. You know, representing the show, and as a professional, that's all I could ask for. You put your time and effort into bringing this work to life, and you know, to be here and represent it and engage with the fans and interact with the people that make the show as successful as it is. I mean, what more can you ask for, really? I'm very, very happy, and you know, since I've been out here, nothing but smiles, so it's cool.
It's great to have you back.
Thank you very, very much. It's great to be back.
Speaking of which, I mean, what can you tell us, you know, about your character coming back and...
What can I tell you? I think we're going to see a different Theo that we haven't seen before. I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, characteristics that people have grown to hate, love hating, that are still going to be present, but we're talking about a guy who was so confident in the aspect that he was winning. He was going to win this game that he was playing, and you know, manipulating and lying and conniving and using these human beings as pawns in his chess game. And he lost. He got beat at his own game, and, you know, he failed. He failed, and he got dragged into hell by his sister, which he has done wrong and that he's killed. So it's the question of, I can only imagine what he's endured being in that hole. And what's really cool is that we actually dive into that a little bit and explore it in season 6. So we show what he's gone through, and we can see how it's affected him. And there's a changed Theo in front of us now. We see a man that's broken. We see a man that's hit rock bottom and now has to climb his way back up. You're going down this path of redemption, and, you know, nobody likes you. Nobody wants to see you in the same room. And it's like, how do you deal with that? You have to swallow your pride and just kind of move forward. And we get to explore that element in this season. It's really, really cool. I'm excited for fans to see it.
Obviously, Theo and Scott have had their differences. And then Scott's path was responsible for what happened to him. So what can you tease about what his relationship is going to be with them, and particularly Scott going forward?
I mean, I think, as always, as the alpha and the leader that Scott is, he's going to have to pieces pack back together, reunite everybody. And if there's anybody that can do that, it's definitely Scott.
So how is Theo going to relate to him?
He's going to try to, you know...
Can we quickly switch? I'm so sorry.
I'm in the middle of a... What are you talking about?
Okay, sorry.
I'm in the middle of a question.
I
think Theo's involvement with the pack, it's like I said, it's going to be very... I'll put it this way. He's not welcomed warmly back to Beacon Hills. There's going to be a lot of work that's going to have to go into, you know, just earning people's trust. And, you know, it's really going to be the question of how badly does he want that. And I think due to the circumstances, Theo wants to stay alive. Because with the Ghost Riders present in Beacon Hills, everyone's disappearing, everybody's dying, and he doesn't want to be next. He doesn't want to be saved from hell just to be... taken by a ghostwriter, so I think the circumstances really require him to make an effort to repair these relationships. It'll be fun. Awesome.
Is there a chance that you might give Theo a break and become Mike Montgomery again for a little bit?
I've always said, man, you know, both shows, I love them to death. And as an actor, I just love what I do so much. I just want to be on any set, really, performing. At the same time, it is a business, and we have to make the best business move that we can. Really, it's a schedule thing, you know? If schedules work out, like, I would love to go back. Yeah. That was my home. I grew up on that show. Yeah. I went through my teenage years on that show, so if schedules work out, you know, it's definitely possible.
Yeah.
So cool. I'd be excited. I'd be excited to make the return. Too. Rock the facial hair.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. Take care. Excellent. No complaints. How are you guys?
Sorry.
Oh, please join us. Hello.
Well, were you surprised you're coming back?
Slightly, yeah. I was expecting a phone call right when season 5 ended of like, hey, so this is what we're doing in season 6. And I didn't get that phone call. So for the longest time, I didn't know. I didn't know if Theo was going to make his return to Beacon Hills. And, you know, after some time, they had already kind of started the season. They got in contact with me and told me their plans. And I was very, very excited to come back and, you know, kind of just jump back into this character. Show the fans and the audience a new side of Theo that we haven't seen before.
So considering he spent his time, you know, down there, how do you think his relationship will change now?
I think he's a different person, for sure.
Has he made him, like, a convention?
He's been, the thing is we're going to explore that in the season. We're going to show fans a glimpse of what he's gone through, and I can tell you, I can share with you right now, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. So, you know, it's definitely changed him. It's changed him, and I think he's coming back as, like, a broken man, you know? And he's going to have to swallow his pride and face all of these adversities in order to stay alive. So it's interesting. It really is.
Prior to that, it was very, you know, like, very ruthless and what it was. But, like, could you see some association with the Red Doctors from childhood as something like, you know, conditioning, like they indoctrinated him? Or was he really all that time using them as a means to torment his own people?
I don't believe that. There's this awesome, like, edit that this fan had made, and I can't credit them because I don't know the name, but I've seen this image online, and it's a picture of Theo, and it says, why should I apologize for the monster I've become?
Yeah.
No one apologized for making me this way.
So you think it was like...
I do. I think the entire time, like, what people kind of didn't really, I don't want to say understand, but maybe took for granted a little bit, was you were talking about a kid that was taken in by these people and conditioned to believe whatever it is they wanted him to believe. I think the entire time, like, he's been under someone else's manipulation.
Yeah.
Again, like, where do you think he learned to be the manipulator that he is and lying?
The thing was really freaking creepy.
Yeah, right? But it's like, I feel like he didn't just have that inherently. Like, he learned those things. So I think there is this level of sympathy for the kid. It's like, damn, like, he's been manipulated this entire time.
And will you be, is your story, Theo's story, involved with the continuing with the Dread Doctors? Like the tank wolf juice, alpha juice guy?
The Nazi werewolf?
Yeah.
There's associations all across the board, yeah. I think the thing is, you know, Theo knows a lot about what's going on in Beacon Hills.
So he has something to offer the good guys.
He has some knowledge. He has some knowledge, absolutely. So I think that may or may not be his way back into the pack.
Yeah. And is there any tying together of the two villains, of the Nazi werewolf and the Ghost Riders, or are they separate?
I can't necessarily speak on that. You know, I can't speak on that. I maybe could, but I might lose my job. And we don't want that.
Will the memory loss of the Ghost Riders, is that affecting Theo as well, or is he after that, or is there anything you can say about
Well, I can tell you that, you know, when he makes his return, he is not affected by the Ghost Riders whatsoever. He has information, and You know, he just wants to stay alive. He knows how deadly and how serious they are,
yeah.
And he knows it's very, very possible for him to be taken just like anyone else.
Yeah.
So he's doing whatever he can to stay alive and make sure that doesn't happen.
Yes, yeah, one more question.
Okay, do you guys have any pictures on your Twitter?
Yeah.
Oh, these are fun.
Well,
these are fun.
Twitter, never mind.
we can do something else.
I'm kidding.
These are fun.
How do you think his relationship with Scott will go? Because I know that's a big highlight.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that, like, Theo comes back, and it's the same guy that we, like, love to hate, you know? Like, he's the douche. Yeah. The douchebag.
Still the same personality.
Yeah, but, like,
motive.
Exactly. But, you know, what's interesting is that there's just going to be this fun dynamic to explore, you know, of, like, this level of humility.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's difficult when he makes his return to look Scott in the eye.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's this facade that he's going to keep playing of,
yeah,
like, this tough guy.
Yeah.
Of, like, oh, I was fine. I was in hell. Nothing happened to me.
Yeah.
But we start to see as the season progresses, like, what happened has left a scar, and it really, it's really, yeah, it bleeds through,
yeah,
which is really fun. It's fun to play.
Yeah, really.
It's cool. I hope, like, you know, it kind of gives a fresh perspective in the fans' eyes of the character.
Yeah, the whole way through, we really didn't know whether he was going to turn at any point, like, in terms of, like, getting him in any way redeemable. So it's going to be interesting.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a great season.
Thank you
guys so much. Absolutely. Take care.
I'm not going to say anything.
So we left off last season with the footsteps. What can you kind of tease about the footsteps that are there?
They belong to a person. They belong to a Nazi werewolf. So you're going to see him, yes. You're going to see who they belong to, and you're going to see the moment of breaking out, actually. There's a trailer that we're going to show in a little bit that will show you a lot more. We actually... It's a pretty spoilery trailer, but I think it sets up the season and the mystery pretty nicely.
Season 5, like, wraps a lot of things up really neatly, so can you talk about kind of deciding where to go from there and developing season 6?
It was... A lot of the times these seasons get dictated sort of by what's the new mythology we feel like pursuing, and The Wild Hunt and The Ghost Riders kind of lent itself to a lot of things, actually, that we needed to do within this new season. I kind of thought 5-20 was going to be a series finale. So we've written a few season finales that actually feel like series finales, partly because we treat each season like it's its own book. I feel like it should have a sort of ending. The cliffhangers are usually there just to throw a good question or a good teaser for the next season, but you'll see. It's the jumping off point was the mythology and this new mystery we've come up with.
And Cody Christian is obviously here, so
he
what
is.
Can you kind of tease? I mean, so Theo,
he's back.
6, he's back.
Yes.
Okay.
They had to dig him up. You'll see a little bit of that in the trailer. But for us, it was really not a question of whether he would come back, just if and when. Well, just when.
Speaking of the Ghost Riders, too, what can you tell us that we don't already know from what we learned in season 5? Is there anything you can tease about the mythology?
Yes. We tie the Ghost Riders into kind of the real-world mythology of mass disappearances. So you'll see how this affects in a bit of a global way. Our Beacon Hills kids actually do venture well outside of Beacon Hills in this season. You'll see.
Are we going to encounter any new mythological creatures over the course of the next season?
Well, we split the seasons up into 2 parts, so the Ghost Riders will be there for the first 10 episodes. You may encounter new ones in the next 10 episodes, which we're going to figure out at some point.
Okay.
And then, talked about taking a step back for season 6 and trying to test the reins a little bit.
Yeah.
How did that end up going for you, and what was it like looking at the season sort of as an outsider?
It's interesting. I was there in the writer's room most every day, but I was definitely not as involved as I was previous seasons, especially with production rewrites and stuff. I only did a production rewrite on one script. Mostly it was really trying to hand it off to the writers and to the production team, and to be able to take a vacation. I always joke that I was kind of like a countess in Downton Abbey. What's a weekend? I had no weekends. People outside of the business, I don't think they really understand just how much work it takes to put 20 to 24 episodes of TV out a year. It's fucking impossible. And to try to make them each good. Some of them don't turn out so well. And you kind of have to grit your teeth in post-production, wish you had another day to shoot, wish you had the money to go back and reshoot a certain scene. It's funny because I look at all the news about Rogue One doing reshoots. That's standard. We wish we had more money and more time to do more reshoots. Sometimes you don't know how a scene is going to play until you've actually filmed it. So that turned into a lot longer answer than I expected. I don't even remember the question.
Is that there be a definitive video moment in the premiere? Can you give us anything more on that?
No.
No?
you'll have to watch.
Okay. And Teen Wolf has a lot of really interesting relationships and new hookups all the time. Do you tease any new pairings that we might see in
the event? We're building the romances that we've been concentrating on in like season 5 and throughout the seasons. I think it's an interesting season for Scott to go it alone. Posey's talked a little bit about that in the press, but I think it's kind of cool. And the writers have been concentrating on Liam and Hayden and Mason and Corey, and I quite like seeing where those two relationships head.
Getting loud that
way. Yeah. We really went for mystery, a kind of ghost story this season, and I give great credit to the writers for taking the reins and really running with it. The reins, pun intended.
There's been a remarkable inclusion of LGBT characters and characters of color as well. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the importance to you of that kind of representation and, you know, what it means in terms of modern television and the direction.
It's hugely important to me as a gay man myself. I want to see representations on TV, and I want to see, personally, I want to see relationships that are good. I also want to see, it's a little difficult for me because I know there's certain sections of fandom that believe that some of these, I know you want them to have a good death or a good, but I don't want to think that LGBT characters, LGBTQ plus, A plus characters, are untouchable.
Yeah.
We want the same dramatic things to happen to them. If we had good narrative reason to kill Mason, I would say maybe. But it's hard because I love Kylan. But if it made a great story, you want to go where the great story takes you. But I want to see gay relationships on TV so badly. I wish that we had space to put other characters in that showed it. I'm working on a new show that should be going to pilot soon, where that's going to be a very heavy issue as well.
Yeah.
So it really, it's something that needs to be there, and I have great respect and admiration for Kylan, because there are not many black gay characters on television.
Absolutely.
And it can be a scary thing for a straight actor to play gay, because they believe they'll get typecast. So he's been fearless about it, which is awesome.
Do you feel like a certain amount of pressure for, you know, because you're kind of venturing into new territory, and do you feel like you have to tread carefully with like what you do and don't do with these characters?
You know, I think you do now. I think there's a bit too much focus on what you can do with those characters, what you can do with gay, lesbian characters. And eventually there'll be, hopefully there'll be enough characters so that it won't feel like the trope, you know, kill your gays trope, that a gay character can get killed off on a show and it won't be a big deal because there are enough gay characters on television to not make it seem like it's an unusual thing. Because TV these days, they kill everyone.
It's true.
Their bodies dropping on every show. And it's not even, that doesn't even have to be Game of Thrones. Didn't Empire kill off two lesbians? I don't watch the show, but I read, like, I was like, I didn't know they killed people on Empire. Thank you for asking those questions, though. They're very important to me.
Yeah.
So, yes, the answer is we're always trying to do better and do more.
It's good to see you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Thank
you. A lot of cameras. That's my hair and makeup.
Fabulous.
How are you guys?
Good.
Happy Comic Con.
Yeah.
Who's what shirts you're in? What's that? Game of Thrones? Nice. House Targaryen. Were you surprised by Jon Stark?
Nobody was surprised.
So let's talk Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
So I had a question.
Doctors definitely had an agenda. They had a real purpose in their scientific experiment of creating the beast. And these, the Ghost Riders of the Wild Hunt, are very much within a recognizable myth. The Riders on the Storm by the Doors is about the Ghost Riders. Getting my tenses mixed up, sorry. Bad for a writer. They're fun. They're going to be... I've always wanted to do a season where it's not as bloody, but the supernatural stakes are just as high. So it's not like season 3A where people were being sacrificed one after another and it was the bloodiest season we ever did. It's going to be a little different.
Yeah, because I did the virtual reality yesterday, which mm-hmm. gave... We didn't know what was going on.
I haven't done it yet myself.
But will it reveal...
Was it good?
Yeah, it was really fun, but it obviously revealed like what they do and that they like race people and then the people who are left forgot,
yeah,
you know, what was happening. So... Is that going to affect every character? Is there, you know, or is there a particular character that's going to have that?
You'll see from the trailer.
Oh yeah.
wait and watch the trailer.
You could have dropped that this morning.
I know. Maybe we should. Well, we've got to save some surprises for the panel.
Yeah. And I was sort of wondering as well, how long is this story and the arc that is going to happen being planned? Like when something unexpected happens, like for example, like with Dylan's accident, with a cast member leaving to go to Storyport. How does it work constructing a new story or fitting like your original idea into the scene?
You definitely do a little bit of scrambling. This idea was planned. I can say this idea was planned to work around his movie schedule. It was not planned to work around an accident. And I know that's true of his other obligations as well. So we feel pretty confident in the season, though, that it's going to be a fun season, and it's a pretty styles-heavy story.
Yeah.
Even though he might be missing from an episode or two. But you'll see from the trip.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. Get finished.
Every season,
Yes, you are. And it plays actually a kind of, there's a crucial moment in this season where it's revealed.
I'm so used to not hearing the no.
I told someone a couple of years ago what his name was, and then they forgot because it's very hard to write down. It's a lot of consonants. But I'm sure somebody online's already guessed it. But you'll see.
Well, with these villains and the Ghost Riders, like, are some of our, you know, heroes' powers going to help and or hinder? Like, are some of the werewolf's supernatural abilities going to actually allow them not to versus, like, a banshee's powers going to help and things like that?
there's one character who in particular becomes crucial to solving the problem of ghost riders, yes. And their ability. I won't use any other pronouns.
What's the inspiration of like the look of them, like the hat and the jacket and stuff?
Well, the ghost rider myth goes all the way back to Norse myth. It's a very European myth, but the translation into America was sort of a Western myth.
Yeah.
And
sort of cowboy.
We really liked that. I wanted to do a kind of Western look. You guys know I've taken a step back from the day-to-day, but I was still involved a good bit in the look of the bad guys, and I'm still the showrunner, but I wanted to make sure that they looked really cool. I love the sort of desiccated faces. You'll get a closer look at them in today's trailer, and also at Comic-Con. All right.
Oh,
great to see you guys.
So much.
Thank you.
What did you do? Why are all those flashes flashing? Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Is a good song playing right now?
Yeah. You want me to play one?
Fuck yeah. It's the new Blink.
Okay, diving right in. Scott has been thinking about leaving Beacon Hills. You've heard a little bit about this, you know, and maybe what he's doing after high school. How hard is that for him to possibly leave Beacon Hills in somebody else's hand? Does he feel a responsibility that just ties him to the town?
Oh, absolutely. Scott feels he is the protector of this town. I think also he feels a little guilty for the reasons why things happen in Beacon Hills. A lot of bad comes to Beacon Hills because they're in search of Scott McCall, the true alpha, and he knows this. So he knows that he, at the same time, Beacon Hills is still a beacon of supernatural, but he's a lot of the reason why people come there, why the bad comes there, and he's the reason why it kind of all vanishes, you know, because he's the one who gets his pack together and kills all the evil and defeats it all. So it's kind of a bittersweet thing. He wants to make sure that Beacon Hills is going to be safe, but he's also a little nervous that it won't be safe without him. So his thought process is to make sure that his protege, Liam, is going to be ready in order to take the place of himself if he leaves, you know? So it's still up in the air, but he's got backup plans, definitely.
Oh, let's
see. I mean, my impression, it's been so hard to be, like, shocked by any of the villains anymore, you know, because it's just, I can't really be shocked anymore in the set of Teen Wolf. Like, we've done everything. And so my impression of the Ghost Riders, I was like, fuck yeah, horses, sweet. And it was a lot of fun to have the horses on the set, you know. We got close to them hitting us, but those horses are so professional. They hit their mark better than any other actor in the world. They're, like, the most trained professionals in the world. It was really cool. What was the second part of your question?
How is Scott going to interact with
them? How's Scott going to interact with them? The same way that he interacts with every villain. He figures them out. He's like, okay, let's break it down. Let's figure out who the hell these people are. And then he's like, okay, now let's figure out how the hell to kill them. But without actually killing them, because I'm a good guy and I don't kill people. That's it. You know, his interaction with them kind of depends on how they approach him, you know? And there's a lot of things I don't want to give away about that, but, you know, Scott will try to defeat them once again.
So, Teen Wolf has been such an inclusive show. I mean, you know, there's been gay characters, there's been people of color. Like, how does it feel to be, like, a part of something like
that? Oh, dude, fuck, I love it, man. My whole life, all I'm about is just showing people that be yourself, stop being an asshole, don't be mean to people for no fucking reason. And I love that Teen Wolf. And you know, the cool thing about it all is that we do it effortlessly. It's all natural, you know? We don't try to we're like, oh hey, we're putting a gay couple
here. Yeah,
it's
not like pandering.
Exactly. It's not pandering. It's just natural for us because we love that shit. It's who we are. We're advocates for the human race, no matter who you are. And I just really like that people actually acknowledge it and take note of it from our show, and that's the way it should be.
Well, I mean, it's like kind of an allegory sometimes, it feels like, because, you know, when as a supernatural creature, you become like this outcast. You're hiding right. parts of yourself from people, so it's like it becomes a question of identity.
Exactly. We've dealt with the struggling with identity since day one with Scott McCall, you know, and that relates to anybody growing up, gay or not, you know, and I'm really happy that we can bring that to like an adult form, and you know, it's really cool. I love it. No one's alone. You guys, you're not alone. You know, it's just life is fucking cool. Let's have fun. Don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
Don't be an asshole. Let people live their lives the exact way they want to, as long as they're not hurting anybody. You know, so. That's the way it should be. Cool. And we do a pretty good job at keeping that alive on Tinder, which I'm happy about.
Great, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. Is that it?
I have another question.
Yeah, go for it. She's not paid.
Season 5 was about, you know, the past sort of broke up, came back together in the end. Like, what are the dynamics going to be like in season 6?
Season 6, so the pack kind of splitting up and then coming back together really solidified them, and that kind of carries on through season 6. You just see how strong they actually are, and you get the sense of since high school's coming to an end and Scott's gonna, you know, thinking about moving away, you get the sense that like them moving away and separating from each other is a big impact on them, and you're like, fuck, this is gonna be sad if this ever happens, you know. So it's really cool. They've really built up a bond with one another through, especially through last season. You know, they're closer than ever, and it's a bittersweet thing because they're closer than ever and they're more powerful than ever. But it's sadder when they're actually going to part ways if it ever happens. You know what I mean? Cool.
Thank you.
Fuck yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys.